My task. Everybody needs a sense of power.
Now, there's no need to take it that way. I did say you could use this room if you wanted to.
Yeah, it's all right. It's your radiogram, and I'm just a humble lodger.
Oh, don't be silly. Oh, I see neither of you has eaten your supper. Where's Marjorie?
I don't know. I've been out all afternoon.
I've brought the evening paper. Look, doesn't he look a scream?
If you're referring to that picture of that hippie prophet, he doesn't look and is not a scream. He's gone to Tibet, he's doing what he wants to do. Every man must do his thing.
That's all very well when you've got a couple of million behind you.
Look, if you're referring to the rent...
Oh, you do go on so. I'm not referring to the rent. Anyway, it'd be a funny world if everybody did what they wanted to.
It'd be a lot more sane than it is now.
If everyone had your ideas, people could get away with murder.
Time for you to take your place on the jury as Bristol Myers, makers of new Volt toothpaste, invite you to... consider your verdict.
My lord, gentlemen of the jury, I rise to lead evidence for the Crown in the charge against Martin Peter Russell that he did feloniously, willfully, and with malice aforethought, kill and murder his wife, Marjorie. Why he did so will become self-evident as the prosecution calls its evidence. What are the facts? It is common cause that the body of Marjorie Russell was found drowned in a bath at a house known as 126 Charlotte Street, Bloomsbury. This was on the 24th day of November last year, that is, 1968. Without wishing to precipitate matters, it can be said that evidence we shall submit will convince you, gentlemen of the jury, that Mrs. Russell's death was not the result of an accident. At the same time, we shall bring you proof that the prisoner at the bar, her husband, Martin Russell, stood to benefit financially from this woman's death. At approximately 8:15 in the evening of November the 24th, 1968, Mrs. Hibbert, the landlady of the house where the young couple lodged, had occasion to go into the bar.
What do you get when you're home? Him and his hippies. Indeed. Tibet, huh? I don't know why Marjorie puts up with him, I really don't. Oh, you should really lock...
Oh, really, Iris, do you have to make so much noise?
It's Marjorie. She's lying in the bath. She's fainted or something.
Yeah, she's pretending. And please don't interrupt my reading.
Oh, you always hooked out the most callous swine I've ever met. She hasn't fainted. I think she's dead.
Then you'd better call a policeman, haven't you?
Sometimes I think you're mad. Yes, I am going to call a policeman.
And so the landlady summons help from the police constable, who happened to be in the vicinity. And it needed little medical knowledge to realize that the young woman was dead. Was death by misadventure, or was it the result of a deliberate act of destruction? We are confident that you will have little hesitation in concluding that Marjorie Russell's death was deliberate, premeditated, and caused by her husband, the man in the dock. Without any more ado, I shall call my first witness, Police Constable Albert Steele. Constable Steele, I have here the occurrence book for Bloomsbury Police Station, in which you state that you were summoned to a drowning case at 126 Charlotte Street, Bloomsbury.
That is so, sir. Yes.
Will you tell the court about this, please?
Certainly, sir. Well, whilst proceeding in a northeasterly direction along Charlotte Street, a woman came running out of one of the houses.
Just a moment. What time was this?
Approximately 8:20 in the evening, sir.
Go on.
The woman, who later identified herself as Mrs. Ibbett, said that one of her lodgers had been drowned in the bath. I went into the house, number 126, and she took me upstairs into the bathroom. There I found a woman lying in the bath. Her head was under the water.
Was the bath full?
No, sir. I'd say it was no more than half full.
What measurement of water, how many inches of water would there be, would you say?
There were 13 inches of water, sir.
You're sure it's?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. What did you do?
Well, I'm trained in first aid, sir. and I could tell it when she was dead. I thought I'd better not touch the body. Of course, I learned later that she'd been dead some time before I got there.
Now, you say there were 13 inches of water, also that her head was under the water, but would that be sufficient to cover her entire body?
Well, no, sir, it wasn't. The poor young lady's legs were sticking out of the bath at the other end. You see, sir, it was rather a small bath.
I see. You were able to identify the deceased woman?
Oh, yes, sir. The landlady told me she was a Mrs. Russell. I asked if she was married, and the landlady said yes. Her husband was downstairs in the living room.
In the living room, you say?
Yes, sir. But as I was questioning the landlady, I heard someone playing a record. I was told that was the husband.
Did you not think it strange that Russell should be playing a record while his wife lay drowned in the bath?
No, not at first, sir. I thought he might be sort of so upset as to console himself with the music.
Did subsequent events confirm you in that belief?
No, sir. I went down to the living room.
Mr. Russell?
Yes, I'm Russell.
There's nothing I can do for your kitchen, sir. How long have you been married, Mr. Russell?
8 months.
Did you say 8 months, sir?
I said 8 months. Now, look, I've got a dead wife lying upstairs. Do I have to be asked silly questions?
I'm just doing my duty, and you're the husband. That makes you next of kin. You don't seem very put out, by the way. Well, I hurried to the station and reported the occurrence.
Thank you. That is all.
Constable Steele, you say you found my client composed.
Yes, sir, I did.
There was no violent expressions of anguish.
Oh, no, sir.
In fact, Russell made no attempt of simulating shock and horror.
Not at all.
No false manifestations of grief, as one would expect from a murderer trying to hide his crime.
That's not for me to say, sir.
His attitude was as calm and as different as he appears now in the dock, although faced with the prospect of being put away for the rest of his life.
I've never quite met anyone like him, sir.
That is a most interesting comment, Mr. Steele. Why do you say that?
Well, sir, there's his wife upstairs in the bath. You'd have thought he'd have run up to see what happened. I took a statement from the landlady. It was her, the landlady, that found Mrs. Russell lying in the water. And she tells me that the prisoner said
Station.
That...
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry, my lad. I know I mustn't give evidence as to what a person tells another person.
I don't think any harm has been done, Constable Steele. How long have you been in the force?
6 years, sir.
And you say you have never met anyone quite like the man now standing in the dock. Are you prepared to stand by that statement?
I certainly am, sir. He seems to have no feelings at all.
Precisely. Did you know that Russell is a disciple of Krishnamurti, who says that all thoughts and feelings must be kept in one's inner self and to one's own private world, and to which no outsider is to gain access?
I don't know what you mean, sir.
I sympathize with the witness's sentiment. All you're asking this witness, Mr. Darlington, is whether he knew your client practiced rigid control over his feelings, are you not?
No, yes, my lord.
Yes. Well, I regard the introduction of some obscure Eastern mysticism as totally unnecessary. Neither is the witness to be expected to give testimony as to the prisoner's philosophy.
Sorry, my lord. I have no further questions for this witness.
I now call Dr. Dennis Chalmers. Dr. Chalmers, on the 24th of November, 1968, you were called to examine the body of a dead woman you now know as Marjorie Russell.
Yes, I was.
Were you able to ascertain the cause of death?
Death was caused by drowning.
Would you describe to the court what you saw on your arrival?
Her head was under the water, and her feet and legs protruded from the opposite end of the bath.
Now, if the woman had suffered some kind of fit or seizure whilst in the bath, would you expect the position she was in?
Indeed not.
Why do you say that, Doctor?
Well, you see, we've measured the length of the bath. This was a number of inches shorter than the height of the deceased. This means that if she had suffered, say, a fainting fit while seated in the bath in a normal position, her head and upper trunk would be supported by the bath. It seems strange that her legs should be protruding from the other end and her head resting on the base of the bath.
What further conclusion did you come to, Doctor?
I felt convinced that someone held her feet above water, causing her head to sink, which resulted in her death by asphyxiation.
That is all.
Doctor, are you seriously telling this court that it would have been impossible for this unfortunate woman to have fainted while in a bath.
I would say it was highly improbable.
Therefore, you admit the possibility.
No, sir, I do not. Had Mrs. Russell fainted while in the bath and fallen so that her head was under the water entering her mouth and nose would have had a marked reviving effect.
Can you say this with certainty?
Our doctor never deals in certainties, but he has to take into account probabilities, cause and effect.
So you are not certain. Thank you for the admission, Doctor. Now, what facts can you produce to substantiate your theory that the woman's legs had been lifted out of the bath?
To me, it's the only possible solution.
Were there any bruises on the woman's legs, for instance?
No. But then again, I'd not expect to find such bruises. If the woman were taken by surprise, force would be unnecessary.
Without any corroborating facts, your testimony can only be regarded as conjecture.
I would rather use the word theory.
But I insist that there is no evidence to support your theory.
I can only repeat that my examination showed the woman to have been in a healthy condition prior to her drowning. I maintain that my theory is the only possible answer to the facts as we have them.
Are you quite sure that you were in possession of all the facts?
Reasonably sure.
Did you know that Mrs. Russell was subject to fainting fits?
As police surgeon, I consulted Dr. Levis, who attended the young lady when that fainting fit took place.
Yes?
When Mr. and Mrs. Russell moved into Charlotte Street, she applied to become Dr. Levis's panel patient. Apparently, the young woman fainted once, and once only. I do not regard that as someone chronically addicted to fainting.
Do you know why Mrs. Russell fainted?
I'm given to understand that she went without food for 2 days.
A number of people have been without food for 2 days without becoming unconscious. Since you examined the body, would you not agree that Mrs. Russell appeared to be of delicate physique?
I didn't know her when she was alive, but I'm prepared to accept that.
You realize, Doctor, that your evidence is of paramount importance. It is you who has put forward the theory. Notice I use the word theory and not conjecture, that someone had lifted the woman's legs out of the bath. Could you, knowing the possible consequences of making such a statement, and I ask again, could you repeat that, not just as a theory, but as something without any shadow of doubt, always remembering that this is a trial of murder?
I've already made it clear that a doctor cannot deal with certainties.
I would ask the members of the jury to make special notice of this question and answer, bearing in mind that a man is considered innocent unless he is proved guilty beyond all doubt. I have no further questions.
That being the case, I think that this is a fitting moment to adjourn for lunch.
And so the court adjourns in the trial of Martin Russell for the murder of his wife, Marjorie. The dramatized version of the case against Russell is brought to you by Bristol Myers. Back to the courtroom. The trial proceeds as the prosecution's next witness is called to the witness stand.
You are Mrs. Iris Hibbert? And you rent a house at 126 Charlotte Street, Bloomsbury?
Yes.
The prisoner is known to you?
He and his wife lodged with me.
How long have you been letting rooms, Mrs. Hibbert?
My husband was irregular, you see. We'd been married 6 years and he got killed in an accident while they were holding manoeuvres on Salisbury Plain.
You mean your husband was a regular soldier?
Yes. He died 4 years ago. What with my compensation money and my widow's pension, I thought I'd rent the house and take in lodgers.
I see. So two of your lodgers were a couple named Mr. and Mrs. Russell?
Yes, sir.
How long did they occupy rooms? When did they first move into your house?
Oh, they moved in August last year.
Well, this means, does it not, that they were in residence for nearly 4 months?
That's right, sir.
Did they pay their money regularly?
Well, they gave me 1 month in advance, and I never saw a bean out of them after that.
Did Mr. Russell give any indication as to the nature of his work?
Yes, he told me he was a copywriter with an advertising agency, said he wrote advertisements.
And his wife?
She used to be a model, you know, for taking pictures, that sort of thing.
You say that you received 1 month's money in advance and no further payments. Did you not question him?
Yes. He said he'd turned in his job.
I'm sorry, Iris, you'll have to wait for your money.
Now, look, Martin, I don't want to appear grafting, but you've been here 3 months now.
Look, you know I chucked my job. I'm not going to dish out any more platitudes.
Then what are you going to do for a living?
Write my book.
Write your book? I haven't seen you do any writing.
You haven't seen me do any writing because I haven't started.
But don't worry. If you'll pardon an old Victorian phrase, I'll raise the money on future expectations.
What do you mean, expectations?
Money, you silly goose, money. What do you think I mean? By the end of this month, I shall be able to raise a large sum on certain future expectations. What a nice word that is, expectations.
Funny man, Martin. Go for days without speaking a word, and other times he'd talk the hind leg off a donkey.
I would like to repeat part of your evidence, Mrs. Hibbert. The prisoner said that by the end of this month, I shall be able to raise a large sum on certain future expectations. He said that, did he?
Yes.
Are you sure of that?
Positive.
Thank you. Well, now we come to the fatal night. Did you know that Mrs. Russell intended to take a bath?
Yes, sir. She came into the kitchen just after I'd finished washing up and asked me if the water was going to be hot, because she'd like to take a bath.
At what time is that?
About 2:30. I told her I'd have to light the cistern in the kitchen and she should wait for about 30 minutes.
And did she?
Yes. I shouted to her that the bath was hot. I heard her go upstairs and turn on the taps. I didn't see her alive after that.
What made you go to the bathroom at all?
Well, I'd gone out. I went to see a movie and then I went on to meet a friend at the Fitzroy Tavern for a drink. I didn't get back till 8:00. And I noticed that the ham I'd left in the kitchen for Mr. and Mrs. Russell hadn't been touched. I knocked on the door. I see you've not had your supper.
Oh, I'm not hungry.
But what about Marjorie? She's not eaten anything either.
No, I don't know. I've just come in. I haven't seen her. Where is she?
Funny. I didn't know she was going out. I don't know what really made me go upstairs and try the bathroom door, but I did. And she was lying there like that. I rushed downstairs to tell him. He said you'd better call a policeman.
Which you did?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. That is all. Mrs. Hibbert, Russell denies ever saying to you that he would be able to raise a large sum of money on future expectations.
Why should I lie?
That's a very interesting question. Mrs. Hibbert, did you not ask Russell to accompany you to the cinema on 2 occasions and to visit the Fitzroy Tavern on a number of occasions?
Oh, so what? I wasn't meaning any harm.
No one suggests you were, Mrs. Hibbert. But it is now February 1969. The conversation you report took place some months ago. Is your memory as good as all that?
Yes, it is.
May I suggest it is difficult to recollect a conversation the day after it took place, let alone after an interval of months. Tell me, do you work, Mrs. Hibbert?
Yes.
Could you tell us what sort of work you do?
What's that got to do with it?
Please, madam.
I work at the Trident Club. Well, you don't think an army pension and having a couple of lodgers who don't pay their rent's going to keep me?
What sort of work do you do at the Trident Club?
If you must know, I'm a stripper.
A what, Mrs. Hibbert?
A striptease dancer. And let me tell you, there's nothing wrong in being a striptease dancer. When you're left a young widow without a husband, beggars can't be choosers.
I'm sure they can't, madam. Now, where was Russell when his wife asked if there would be hot water for a bath?
I don't know.
They had lunch, did they not?
Yes.
Did not Russell say that he was going out immediately after 2:00?
Yes, he did.
So when Mrs. Russell asked about a bath, he wasn't in the house?
I don't know whether he was or not.
That is all, thank you.
I now call Detective Inspector Desmond Johnson. Inspector, as a result of the Home Office pathologist report, you took over the investigation into the death of Mrs. Russell.
Yes, I did.
Certain other insurance aspects came to light, did they not?
Yes. We discovered that when she was a young child, Mrs. Russell's parents had taken out an endowment and life insurance policy. Should the young woman die before the age of 55, an amount of £25,000 would fall due to the beneficiary.
Who was the beneficiary?
We discovered that a week after their marriage, Mrs. Russell had drawn up a will, leaving everything to her husband.
Anything else?
Yes. We also learned that Russell had gone along to his bank and inquired as to the possibilities of raising a loan on these expectations should his wife die.
I don't think that's very clear, Inspector. Do you mean raise a loan in the event of his wife's death?
Yes, I do. You see, it would take some months for probate to be proved. But Russell was told that a loan could be raised on the basis of his expectations.
Thank you. Then what happened?
Well, I called on the prisoner. I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Russell, but there are certain aspects of your wife's death that need clearing up.
Oh, here I am, trying to write, trying to be myself, and nobody will let me. Everyone clawing at me, trying to tear me to shreds.
No one's trying to tear you to shreds. I'm just going to ask you a few questions.
Such as?
Well, now, we know your wife went upstairs, entered the bathroom, turned on the taps, and never emerged again. She entered that room at 3 o'clock and never returned. Where were you?
All over the place.
I'd be a little more precise if I were you, Mr. Russell. Where were you at 3 o'clock?
I was sitting in Bloomsbury Gardens.
What time did you get back?
Half past five, I think. I looked around for Marjorie and she didn't appear to be in, so I went out again.
Where did you go?
Now, look here, I'm
getting... Answer my questions, please. Where did you go?
I walked around the West End of London, envying those well-dressed people with their air of prosperity that I do not possess.
I see. Did you love your wife?
I regard your question as impertinence.
Mr. Russell, I may as well tell you that we're not satisfied that your wife's death was accidental. I don't think you'd be advised to adopt that manner. Now, you say you walked around the West End. What time did you get back?
About 8 o'clock.
And then what did you do?
Nothing.
What do you mean, nothing? Didn't you wonder where your wife was?
Oh, why should I? I wasn't expecting anything tragic to happen.
Mr. Russell, what precisely did you do when you got home? Did you have some food?
I went and played some records.
Didn't you think to go to the bathroom to look for your wife?
That is a very silly question, Inspector. I had no inkling that anything was wrong.
Silly or not, Mr. Russell, I'm arresting you under suspicion, and I caution you that anything you now say will be taken down. I took him inside, and he was duly charged.
Thank you, that is all. Have you been able to disprove my client's statement that he was sitting in Bloomsbury Gardens, and that later he walked around the West End?
I don't see how that would be possible.
Have you been able to find anyone who would be able to testify that he had been at a place other than which he says he was?
If he was in the house all the time, and no one would have seen him, would they?
Nonsense, Inspector. There's a baker who calls every day, a milkman. Letters are delivered. Had Russell been in the house all that time, somebody would have seen him.
Why should they? The bread, the milk, the letters are left either outside or in the passageway.
What is your impression of Russell? Would you regard him as intelligent?
Yes, I would.
Would you not expect an intelligent man to prepare for himself an alibi were he guilty?
He gave us an alibi, which we can neither prove nor disprove.
An alibi which you can neither prove nor disprove. Thank you, Inspector. Thank you very much.
The Crown declares emphatically that the charge of murder against Russell has been proved up to the hilt. We say that this strange, cold, callous young man decided to kill his wife in the knowledge that her death would resolve his financial problems. We say that he knew that the landlady would be visiting the cinema that afternoon, and he took advantage of her absence to drown his unfortunate victim.
The inspector admitted that he could not disprove Russell's alibi. What else is there? The fact that he owed a few months' rent, owed it to a young lady not averse to seeking his companionship. Remember, there is not one witness for the prosecution who has been able to say to the jury, this is positive evidence pointing to Russell's guilt. Are you going to convict him because he has strange modern attitudes to life and his responsibilities as a married man? This delicate young woman fainted in the bath. She lost consciousness and was drowned. And the prosecution can try to turn these simple facts upside down. But you should not let their attempts cause an innocent man and a bereaved husband to suffer further.
Well, you have heard all the evidence. Would you say that all the relevant facts which emerged at the trial of Russell pointed to his guilt or his innocence? In a moment or two, we shall bring you the verdict arrived at by the jury. What was your verdict? Did you find Russell guilty or not guilty of murdering his wife by drowning her? In the actual trial upon which this dramatic presentation is based, Russell was found guilty.
Bristol Myers, makers of new Volt toothpaste, hope you enjoyed tonight's presentation of Consider Your Verdict, produced by Michael Silver.